Hi, it's Anthea Turner here. I'm delighted to be joining Michelle on Brooklands Radio, bringing you the stories behind the stories on Michelle's Book Club.
At Michelle's Book Club, stories unfold, from thrillers to romance, adventures untold. In our author chats, the plot's in the air. Together we'll celebrate stories we share. Bring your imagination, come join the fun. At Michelle's Book Club, there's a book for everyone.
There certainly is. Especially if it's a psycho thriller. I'm so excited about my next guest because she's not only an internationally best-selling author, she's also a good friend of mine. And we met some time ago, didn't we, BA, through a podcast. Now, she is one of the biggest names in psychological thrillers, with millions of copies of her books sold around the world and readers staying up far too late saying, just one more chapter. Now, her debut novel, Behind Closed Doors, was a huge global hit. That's how I first found out about BA. It was her first book, and it was a monster debut novel, and that's being developed for the screen. She's followed it with a string of gripping page turners, including The Breakdown, Bring Me Back, The Dilemma, The Therapist, The Prisoner, and now her brand new thriller, When I Kill You. Now, her stories are full of secrets and twists and those delicious moments where everything you thought you knew suddenly changes. And she's joining us now on Brooklands Radio. BA, welcome.
Thank you, and thank you for that lovely introduction. I have to say how impressed I am at you with all your screens in front of you. I can only manage my laptop or my phone, never two screens
at
one
time.
And you have about six, so honestly, you're an inspiration.
Oh, well, you are an inspiration. I have loved getting to know you and getting a bit behind your writing process when we've chatted before on podcasts and so on. But this is the first time we've been able to chat on the radio. Now, Behind Closed Doors, it's now 10 years since that came out. That changed your life, didn't it?
Oh, gosh, yes, absolutely. I mean, if somebody had told me 10 years ago that my book would be published, that it would be a success, and that I'd go on to write another seven books, I wouldn't have believed it, because my life was just very ordinary before, and it's just changed my life so much. It's given me a life that I never dreamed of having, and I'm loving nearly every minute of it.
It's busy though, isn't it?
I mean, it is very busy.
You're
yes.
Right in the middle of your promo tour, I guess you are. Mm-hmm. You were in Ashtead Bookshop last night, Cobham Bookshop a couple of days ago as well. You're their book of the month there. Everybody's jumping on this book, When I Kill You. Why do you think that is? Why is it getting such rave reviews? And by the way, did you know this? When I was doing my prep for the show, it says it's been optioned. Is that true?
I have no idea. That's the first I've heard of it. So maybe you obviously know something that I don't,
well,
or maybe it's not true, but I don't know.
Maybe it is, but it should be.
I think it would make
it
a good film. I do. I really do, because I think it's got that really tense, there's lots of tension in it. It's got a good pace to it. And I just think that the stalker, and you asked me why you think people enjoy this book and why it might be having rave reviews. And I think the stalker's voice is really important in this book.
It is vital. Yeah. Tell me a little bit about that approach, because we hear from the stalker between every chapter what they're thinking, but we don't know who it is. And Nell is always looking over her shoulder. So can you give me like a snappy synopsis, a look at, you know, setting up what the novel is without any spoilers?
Yes, of course. So main character, Elle, she's called Elle when she's 22 years old. She witnesses a crime from her flat window. And when she sees the perpetrator of the crime several months later in a bar, she decides to go after him because the police tell her that he's not the right man, but she knows that he is. And her chase after this man has terrible consequences. And she hides herself away for many years, for about 12 years, because she feels she has a debt to pay. She doesn't have the right to be happy. And then after 12 years, she begins to make a little small group of friends, and a man comes into her life, Alex, and everything seems to be looking up for Nell. She's changed her name to Nell by then because she's trying to hide her past, and suddenly she acquires a stalker.
Dun, dun, dun. Da-da. Now, this stalker, we don't know who it could be. There are so many possibilities because she's in a new relationship, and that seems a little bit shady too. Is Alex hiding things? Are her friends hiding things? I think everybody's hiding things in true life as well. We really don't know what is going on. We don't know the truth about everybody. But the inspiration for this, wasn't that because one of your daughters witnessed something?
Yes, exactly. So my daughter, one of my daughters lives in London, Eloise, and she was in her flat and she heard a commotion in the street outside. She looked out of the window and she realised that a young woman had had her phone stolen by somebody on her moped. So she thought, oh, well, I might go down and help or whatever. And then a car came around the corner and a man ran down the window, opened the passenger door and said to the young woman, get in. I saw that. Let's go after him. And the young woman got into the car. And that really shocked my daughter because she thought, well, what if I've just witnessed a kidnapping? So she phoned the police and she didn't hear back from them. So obviously everything was fine. But when she told me this story, I just thought, what if? What if something terrible happened to that young woman? And as soon as somebody tells me something like that, I think, I'm sure I can build a book around this. And I already had an idea for the stalker's voice from a book I wrote some time ago, which actually didn't get further than 30,000 words because I just couldn't see where the story was going. But I kept that stalker's voice and I thought, one day I'm going to use that in a book. So I was very excited to be able to use it in When I Kill You.
Your writing method, are you disciplined? Do you like plot everything and then work back from the conclusion? Or I've spoken to some other authors and they'll say these characters kind of develop, they almost become something of their own that they're almost not in control of. Do you like to plot and go steady, or do you just see where it all goes?
I never plot. I don't even have a post-it. I don't have a spreadsheet. I don't have a whiteboard. I don't write notes. I have nothing. It's all in my head, really, because when I first get that idea, and I just think about where the story could go, and that's what I love about the way I write and several other authors write, is we don't know where the story's going, really. We have our start, and I usually have my end, and it's just a journey with your characters to get to that end. And so many things can develop. I might have an idea of how the story's going to develop, but then my characters just take me in a different direction. And I think it's such fun, and it means that my writing is fun. I'm not bored doing it. So hopefully it means that my readers aren't bored, because if I was bored writing it, well, they'd be bored reading it.
They are not bored. You've got legions of fans who couldn't wait for this book. Behind Closed Doors, it's now 10 years. You know that that's one of my most favourite books in the entire world. It's up there in my top thriller ever. Can you tell our listeners a bit about the premise of that? Because it's the kind of book you literally can't stop thinking about for years and years afterwards. And that's what launched you into this wonderful writer's world with incredible success. So just tell us a little bit about that.
Yes, so Behind Closed Doors, it was funny. It's a book I wrote without any pressure because I didn't know it was going to be published. And I was just fascinated. I was living in, I had been living in an expat community for a few years. And with a friend, we were just talking about how everybody seemed perfect and what really might go on behind closed doors. And I just had this idea for a man who was very controlling of his wife, but not to the extent that Jack turned out to be once I started writing his character. And it was really strange because when I was writing, it was as if he inhabited me and he was saying, I have to be much worse than this. So it was just such a fascinating book to write. And I wrote it really quickly and I had no expectations of it being published because I had sent quite a few other books off to be published before that. And I'd been getting lots of rejections and I would just write another book and send that out. So I wrote that really in about 2.5 months and sent it off, just not expecting it to be picked up. And it was. And I think the reason it was picked up and it struck a chord was because I had so many messages from women who had lived through something similar. And I think coercive control had become a crime in the UK at the end of 2015. I had written this book in 2014. And I think just lots of things happened that made this book the right book at the right time. And I always say if I wrote that book now, I don't know whether it'd have the same success at all or if it'd even be published. But then I was just really, really lucky to write the right book at the right time.
You're right, because the conversation was really starting about coercive control. And I think because social media gives us such a platform to highlight that and for people to be authentic and say, this is what I've been through and this is what it looks like. And it's not necessarily being hit. It's not necessarily being, domestically abused in that way. It's the mental torture, isn't it? And you seem to get into those minds in such a remarkable way. You've got a lot of fans from Behind Closed Doors. We need a sequel, BA. When's that going to happen?
Well, funnily enough, you know this, I am actually writing a sequel. The reason is because over the years, so many people have asked me what happened to Millie and Jack. Millie and Grace, sorry, not Jack. And I always just said, oh, they lived happily ever after. But again, another of my daughters suggested that I should write a sequel. And I thought, no, I'll never do that. I've always said, no, I wouldn't. And then I thought, well, maybe I should. And I do think they deserve another story. But it is going to be more of a standalone. So people won't have had to read Behind Closed Doors to read this book. So I'm working on that at the moment. And I'm quite excited about it. But of course, it's always a challenge to write a sequel, I think. Because people just love Behind Closed Doors. I meet people all the time that are reading it for the first time, and I think, well, the book's been out for 10 years, but it gets new fans all the time. So I'm quite excited about this one, but I need to get it right, and that's going to be something that I really need to work on, because I need to be satisfied and happy with the book when I put it out there.
And you've got a happy place, haven't you, where you like to go and write?
Yes, well, I've got lots of places, actually. I think my favourite place to write is in France, because we have a house there. We're lucky enough to have a house there because we lived in France for so many years. And it's miles away from anywhere. There's just fields around. And there I'm not usually disturbed too much and I can just write. So that's my favourite place to go and write. And I'm hoping to go there in April and get a few weeks' peace to be able to really nail the sequel on its head.
I don't know about the peace. You are about to become a grandmum again, aren't you?
Yes, I am. That's very true. But that's at the end of May or beginning of June. So I do have a few weeks' grace before that happens.
And you are the mum of five girls.
Yes.
So do you think somehow, because you were such a busy mum earlier, you really didn't get the time to get into writing until they were more grown up? Did that give you the space as they were starting to leave home that you thought, no, now it's my turn, now it's my dream, I'm going to get into this?
I think so. I mean, I always wanted to write, but I did always think I'll wait till the girls have left home. And actually, it was a daughter that pushed me to write because she saw the competition for a novel and suggested I'd only ever thought about writing stories for children, something I'd still like to do. But she convinced me that I could write a novel. She said, of course you can write a novel. And so I thought, well, why not try? So I bought a laptop and entered this competition. It was the Sunday Times. My book didn't get anywhere, but it gave me the bug. And I realised that I could make the time to write. Two of my daughters had left home, the two eldest ones. So I had the three younger ones at home. And it just so happened, yes, I gave up a job that I had at the local university just to make space to write. And I'm so glad that my daughter pushed me to write a novel, because I probably might not even be writing now if that hadn't happened.
Which daughter was it? Give them a shout out, because I know most Celine. Of your family are listening, aren't they? And Callum's in Weybridge High Street. Hello, Callum. Thank you for listening in.
So it was Celine. So Eloise gave me the idea for When I Kill You, and also she's the one that's pushed me to write the sequel, so she'll be to blame.
And she's not bad at social media. You're terrible at social
media.
I know.
Eloise is brilliant. Getting better. Thank you. You've given my secret away now. And Celine was the one that pushed me to write the novel. She was 16 years old, and she just said, I'm sure you can. And it was that faith that she had in me that I could, she absolutely thought I could write a novel. So I'm so grateful to her, because I just needed that bit of encouragement, I think.
Yeah, to believe in yourself. It's fantastic that your family are so behind you. Mm. Now, we were talking about music for today's show, and we played Lovely Day by Bill Withers. I know that makes you happy. Mm-hmm. You've been through some times in the last few years. It's been quite difficult for you, hasn't it?
But yes, we've lost a lot of members of our family. My mother, my father, my father-in-law, a couple of aunts. I mean, all this, my mother was a while ago, but in the last 6 months, we really have been on a roller coaster.
It's been really hard, hasn't it? But I hope that, you know, writing is helpful to you in your grief process. But you mentioned a track to me that you'd like to play, and I'd love to know why you love it. It's Don McLean's American Pie.
Just because it was the record that we always played, you know, whenever we were travelling with the girls, and we would all sing along. And it's just one of those really, every time it comes on, we all start singing along. And I love it because it's quite, I always think if I was on a desert island and I had to take one record with me, which one would I take? And I've got several, but I think the thing about American Pie is that it's got so much meaning behind it. First of all, it's quite long, so you get value for money, because it goes on for about 6 minutes, I think, the original version. Yeah, you're going to play the short one. And I just love all the imagery, you know, the old men drinking whiskey and rye and driving the Chevy down to the... I think when I listen to this, it evokes so much meaning and so many images for me. And I think I could listen to that quite happily and never get bored with it.
Wonderful. Well, let's share that with our Brooklands Radio listeners. We'll be back after this one. It's Don McLean, American Pie.
A long, long time ago, I can still remember how that music used to make me smile. And I knew if I had my chance that I could make those people dance, and maybe they'd be happy for a while. But February made me shiver with every paper I'd deliver. Bad news on the doorstep. We were singing bye bye, Miss American Pie. Drove my Chevy to the levee, but the levee was dry. Them good old boys were drinking whiskey and rye and singing, this'll be the day that I die. This'll be the day that I die.
That's Don McLean, American Pie for B.A. Paris. Bernadette, just had a WhatsApp in. The question is, and it's a good one, I think, actually. Hi, Michelle and B.A. I would love to know who of B.A.'s five daughters is her favourite. Huge thanks. Who do you think that's from?
I bet that's from one of my daughters.
Can you guess which one?
Probably from, let me guess, it will be from... Eloise.
Yes, you're right. Well done. Hello, Eloise. I met Eloise when we went out for a lunch. The longest lunch of my entire life.
And mine.
You
I'm not
led
used
me
to having
astray.
These.
I remember seeing in your diary, it said, lunch with Michelle, in brackets, drunk.
Well,
that's
I did,
awful.
I
just
have to
just
say,
a tipple or two, right?
And I just mentioned that I'd met Michelle for lunch, and it was very strange at first because I thought I'd sat down at the wrong table because Michelle wasn't the person I was expecting to meet. Do you remember, Michelle?
Is that right?
Yes, because you were doing two women chatting with your friend.
Oh,
and I was expecting...
Liz.
So I wasn't sure that I was actually talking to the right person for about 5 minutes into the conversation.
Oh.
I was too scared to ask you if you were actually the person I was meant to be meeting.
That was the first lunch,
That was
though.
The first lunch. And then after, we arranged a lunch. And it was just a beautiful day. We were in a beautiful place. And we just... and you had promised we would have a drink.
Yes.
Which is why I put that in brackets.
Yes.
But we did. And it was just lovely. And we talked so much that... Hours went by before
I think
we...
it was 7 hours until Eloise actually came and rescued us.
Yes, yeah. But I mean, it was just amazing because sometimes you just gel with somebody.
Yes.
And I think that's the case with you.
I love spending time with you. Normally, if I'm thinking, oh, it's going to be a long lunch, I think, what am I going to talk about? How am I going to fill the space? Oh, no. Mm-hmm. Oh, no. I've got nothing interesting to say. And I actually can't remember a single thing we spoke about.
No, I can't either, really. But I know we had great fun. And... And it's just lovely to have you as a friend. So that's really
well,
nice.
I love you too. Now, I know Eloise is your favourite. Not really. You love five of them equally. But
I
you should
do.
Name them all because they're all listening.
Oh,
I know
I
that.
See. Okay, so Sophie is my eldest daughter, mummy of two little daughters. And then Chloe is my second, and she's mummy to a little girl and a little boy. And then we have Celine, who's the one that persuaded me to start writing. Eloise, who gave me the idea for When I Kill You and made me write the sequel. And Margot, my youngest, who hopefully is listening in London.
Oh, so you've got four grandchildren
mm-hmm.
and one almost arriving.
That's right. Yes.
So your family is expanding.
It sure is.
That might give you an idea for a new novel. Because I know you sort of just take any, you know, you could be walking down the street and you suddenly think, oh, that's a novel. That's a novel. We were talking about my new life, that I've moved from the burbs into London and starting this new life. I'm like, oh, that's a novel.
Yes, I've already got a scenario, Michelle. Yes, for you and your
that.
New life in London.
Yes, I'm with you all the way. I'm happy to contribute in any way. I will take you all around London. We'll have some fun. Now, talking of social media... I loved, so we've just had the Oscars, of course, and Waterstones picked up on the cover of When I Kill You. And what a brilliant, I love when they do this. I've seen Dr. Nigat Arif do this with dresses. Mm-hmm. So they took the red carpet looks and then they applied them to a book cover that looked just like it. How fabulous was that?
It was just so cool to see that. It was incredible. And yeah, I mean, I saw that. My editor sent it to me because I hadn't seen it.
Oh,
and,
fancy that, eh?
Yeah, no. Yeah, I don't go on social media very often. But no, it was brilliant. And it's so clever. And all the other ones as well. Just absolutely wonderful. So
who was the chap with the, what, he had a white jacket and the big bow?
No, somebody did tell me yesterday, but I actually don't know.
Well, look it up on on Waterstones, on
maybe
their social
somebody
media.
Somebody listening can tell us who it was.
Yeah, Eloise, can you get on that, please? she'll be answering that question in about 2 seconds. So yes, social media is a lot, but you're on your promotional tour at the moment, mm-hmm. and as we said, you've been in our local area, Cobham and Ashted. Mm-hmm. Where are you off to next?
I'm going to Morpeth this weekend for the Morpeth Book Festival, so that's lovely. I'm going to be on a panel with Trevor Wood and Guy Morpeth, so I'm looking forward to that. And then I think it's more or less I've got a couple of Zooms with the US, because the book came out in the US a couple of weeks before it came out here. So I had quite a lot of promotional stuff, but with the US it's mainly Zoom. Mm-hmm. Video calls. But no, it's been great. The last 2 weeks I've been out and about meeting readers, which is honestly the best part of being an author, because that's when you get the feedback. Being an author can be quite isolating. Mm. You're just in your room, you're writing. And although you know that people are buying your books, it's when you get that feedback from people that you meet who say, I loved your books, or carry on writing, and you just think, yeah, it makes it so worthwhile.
Now, I think two of your books, at the very least, should have been made into movies, this one and Behind Closed Doors. But you have had a book made into a movie, and it was The Breakdown, wasn't it? Back
yes.
in 2022, starring Minka Kelly?
Yes. Was it 2022? Was it that long ago? Probably.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, it must
just
be.
Just post-COVID.
Yes, yeah, it must be. Yes,
yeah, or during COVID. Mm-hmm. Did you enjoy seeing your book adapted into a movie? Were you part of that process, and did you enjoy it, or does it feel like your baby's being taken away from you?
I think it's always difficult when you sign a book over, because you don't really have that much say. It depends who you are, of course, but I did see the script before the film was made. I think that changed slightly, especially the ending. So when I saw the film for the first time, I was quite surprised by the ending because it wasn't anything like I'd written. But I just feel very honoured to have had a film made of my book, because it's something that I couldn't have even, I mean, let alone get a book published, but to have a film made of a book, it's something that I didn't even think was possible.
Mm-hmm.
It just was beyond, it wasn't even a dream, because it was beyond a dream. So it was interesting. What was lovely was going on the set twice to see the actors. And what blew me away was that they were actually saying the lines that I'd written in my book, which I thought they'd changed that, but they were actually saying what I had written, which was amazing. So, I mean, it was a great experience. It's completely different to my book, because it takes place in a mansion and there's a supernatural element, which wasn't at all in my book. But I do understand that they have to do things to make films more cinematic.
Mm-hmm.
So they have to change things, obviously. And I think that explains the ending as well.
Was it filmed? Where was it filmed, the location?
It was filmed, I think, near Ipswich somewhere. I can't remember because I didn't drive there myself. But yes, it was. It's definitely in England.
Yeah.
And of course, I can see why they didn't film it in the little cottage where it was actually set, because all the equipment, the camera equipment, that was what surprised me.
It would never fit anyway.
It would never fit in a normal kitchen. So, no, but it was, and it's worth seeing the movie just to see the grounds and this beautiful house.
Yeah. Well, you write very strong characters. And we've had a question in from Sarah in Twickenham, and she says, okay, talking of long lunches, if you look back on all your books, which character that you've created would you like to take a long lunch with, and why?
Oh, gosh, that's such a good question. And nobody's ever asked me that before. They've asked me which character I enjoyed writing the most. And I always say Jack, which sounds terrible, but he was such an interesting character to write. But would I actually want to go and have lunch with a sociopath? So I don't know. I think he would be fascinating. And he's got beautiful manners, looks good.
Right.
So, I mean, that might be nice.
Not bad eye candy for
a
couple of hours.
But, oh, gosh, that's such a good question. I really don't know.
Do you think you'd be fooled by Jack? Do you think you'd fall in love with him?
No, I wouldn't, because I know I wrote him. I invented him, or rather he invented himself for me. But, that's such a good question. I really don't know who I'd pick. I'd have to think long and hard about it.
How about this latest book?
From the latest book, I would probably choose my main character, Elle, who became Nell, just to find out her motivation and what she... I just like to see where she is at now
with
her life.
She's a bit complicated, really, isn't she?
I think, you know, she was 22 when she acted as she did, and I think she had a belief, and I really admired that in her.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
She believed something, and also she felt very sorry for the murdered young women, that's not giving anything away, because she didn't have anybody to fight for her on British soil, and she just thought, I know who it is, and I'm going to go after that man. And she didn't want him to admit anything that he'd murdered her, but just that he was the man that was driving the car that she'd got into.
Right.
So... And it was that sense that she had of justice and injustice. And I think that's I really admire that in her. So I'd probably go out and have lunch with her.
OK, well, invite me.
I'll come along.
I'll come too. Right, final question, BA, because I know you've got all kinds of promotional stuff to do and probably thousands of signatures to put into books. What do you have on your bedside table?
At the moment, I have a brilliant book called Hidden Pictures by Jason. I'm just going to pronounce his name properly, if I can just remember it. It's, oh gosh, sorry, I've lost it. I did have it here on my phone.
Hidden Pictures.
Yes, Jason.
Jason Rekulak?
Yeah, Rekulak, yes.
Okay.
Yes, so I met him in the States. I was in Phoenix recently for a book retreat there, which was absolutely fantastic, so much fun. And Jason was there, and he's written this book, and it's absolutely brilliant. I've just got author envy, because what he has done, it's called Hidden Pictures, and it's about a young woman who goes to be a nanny to a five-year-old boy who loves drawing, Teddy. And he draws these pictures, but they get darker and darker and darker and more sinister. But they're all in the book. So you can see the pictures that he's drawing in the book. It's absolutely brilliant. It's just a brilliant way to tell a story.
Interesting.
And
concept.
He's also written another one called Last One at the Wedding, which is his latest book, which I loved as well. So that's what I've got on my bedside table. I'm also looking forward to reading The Correspondent as well. That's just come out.
So. Wonderful. Well, B.A. Paris, thank you so much for joining us on Brooklands Radio. It's such a joy to talk to you here. I've been waiting for you to come and join me and find some space in your busy schedule. And you need to get back to writing, because I have got to read that next segment, that next sequel to Behind Closed Doors. I'm waiting for you, B.A.
Thank you so much. It's been such fun being interviewed by you, Michelle. So thank you very much for this lovely interview.
Anytime, anytime. And if you missed any of this interview, you can always catch up on our Listen Library. It'll be a podcast when Graham Laycock has converted it by tomorrow, and you can share it with your friends and go out and buy that book, When I Kill You. It's scary. It'll keep you up all night, and you'll be thinking about it long after you finish it. I finished it in a day. And good. I was sending you pictures, wasn't I?
Yes,
of
you
me
did.
Reading it. And I started in the morning. By the evening, I was done. It's brilliant. Go buy it. At Michelle's Book Club.